Silence.
Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 265 of Nerd Pride Radio. 265, that is the number of young athletes that came forward to accuse sports medicine doctor Larry Nassar of Michigan of sexual abuse last year. Boy, that's really terrible. That's what I found, though. Sorry. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me.
How you doing today?
Why, thank you, Eli. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I'm a Pathfinder / D&D nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's like seven other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore.
Can I just say how long it took you to find just one thing on 265?
Oh, 265. Yeah, well, 265 is another one of those numbers that does not have its own Wikipedia entry, and finding a nerd fact about it was slow going, so that's why I settled on the sex abuse scandal, even though really tragic and not my usual style, but that's where we
at
went.
At least
so,
it ended at that number, didn't continue.
That's right. As you can hear, my co-host this week is my favorite son, Elijah. Hey, Eli. Good to see you. Yeah, grunt. But you know what? Let's get straight into it. It's time for the meticulously poured I have been gone for a month. I am sorry. I am so bad at this anymore. The meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me and Eli where we talk about whatever interesting things we've stumbled across in the last week. If something tickles our nerd fancy in the course of our busy weeks or months, we'll add it to the master list, and the very best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every time we record. You lucky dogs. So, straight into the master list, we're going to start off with the gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
All right. So first up on the gaming table, what do you want to talk about first?
Well, me and my little brother Noah haven't been able to really find something to do together. And here he comes. And we found this, well, we didn't find it, we've known about it for a long time, but we haven't been able to play it together because our older brothers are out of the house. It's called Duck Game. It's a game on Steam and yeah, all that. But me and my little brother were playing it today while we were at school in my mom's classroom getting stuff.
Isn't that horrible? Their mom makes them go to school even after school is out for the summer?
No, we were helping her.
I know you guys
No, we only
helping.
Showed up because we wanted food.
Yeah, that's actually true.
They were helping her shut down her classroom. So it was actually a fun family event for the most part. So anyway, they were playing Duck Game and...
It's just... For some reason, it's one of those games where you kill each other and you don't get angry at the other person for killing you. Like, when I'm playing a game of, like, Call of Duty with my cousins or something, that gets really boring after the fifth time you've been killed. But in Duck Game, there are so many ways you can just kill the other person or kill each other.
Okay, I have only barely looked at Duck Game at all. What kind of game is it? I mean...
Pretty much, you play as a duck and your whole goal is to find some way to murder the other ducks.
Okay.
It's 2D, it's a platformer, so...
Okay, that's what I was going to ask, because it looks like a side-scroll platformer sort of thing. except that you guys are
it's not
killing
a
each other.
Though.
Every time I look, all I ever see is there's always a blender on screen where if anyone falls into it, they wind up getting smashed around forever and there's no escape.
They recently added Stage Maker.
Actually, that's been in the game for a long time.
Well, whatever.
Okay, they recently discovered Stage Maker.
Yes, and Noah did this thing where he got a bunch of swords and dropped it into this thing with a bunch of springs, like from, I guess, the closest thing I can get.
Oh, is that what that is?
Like
yes,
Sonic
and
springs.
So, like Sonic Springs. And he put them in a circle, so no matter what, the swords would stay in there. But anything else you drop in there, like a gun, will fire off every time it hits one of those things. So if you get...
The swords also slash whenever they hit the spring.
Oh, that's
so
terrible.
All you hear is just sword slashes repeatedly. Just...
So anyway, where do you get Duck Game, and does it cost anything?
You can get it on Steam and Switch. That's all I know you can get it on. I don't know if you can get it on like PS4 or Xbox.
I think you could.
Okay, and is it a free game?
No. It costs like $14 or $7.
Wow, where did you guys get money? That's ridiculous.
I still have a 200, like 120.
I know. You've still got all that gift money piled up because you don't spend it fast enough. Cool. All right, wait. What was the other game we played this weekend?
Pathfinder?
No.
What?
We didn't play
Pathfinder. No, Starfinder.
Aha, Starfinder. Oh my god, we had so much fun playing Starfinder. You guys want to talk about it, or do you want me to?
We can talk about it.
Okay, hold on. Because, and also, this is for the first adventure path of Starfinder. We're now in the beginning of the second book of that adventure path. If you're planning on playing through it, we'll try not to be spoilery, but, you know, maybe you want to skip ahead a few minutes just in case, because we're kind of lazy and bad about that. Bless you. But enough from me here. Go ahead, Eli.
So we have now, in Starfinder, it's become this whole entire, like, cop show. And because we've already been, like, a SWAT team.
Uh-huh.
And now we've actually done interrogations on people.
It's really cool. The magic of Starfinder when I first started playing it was that it was like you could make any sci-fi game you wanted, any sci-fi setting you had, any sort of genre. And it turns out that it's just really flexible and it's really well written. And so, yeah, like he says, it's turned into this, at least for the moment, they're playing this police procedural. And I know what's coming next, so I know how it's going to change. But
the closest thing I can compare it to and how, well, just because he has three dorky sons, is Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Because it's supposed to be all this serious and all that, but with our characters, there's no way we can make it.
Imagine it's more like Castle, or like I'm watching Lucifer now, so everything is Lucifer. It's like a police procedural, except it's got some kind of really far out or wacky elements on the side that are just kind of that throw in a lot of humor value to it, and it was just so much fun. We had a good time. It's been a long time since we've gotten to play Starfinder, and this was so exciting. It was really good.
There wasn't even any fighting involved.
No combat at all, and you guys all got along, which was weird, and God, it was great.
And
I mean, like, the guns never came. In fact, you had to turn in your guns, or
no,
you chose to turn in your weapons.
No, we didn't turn them in. We put them in the ship.
Well, yeah, you know what I mean. Okay, you're right. But yes, you guys didn't even bother to carry most of your weapons. You could have, but you chose not to, and...
we had a whole argument.
Never even needed it and never got... Yeah, they must have spent 15 minutes arguing about whether or not they were going to carry guns and which ones and maybe they should hide them or how they should hide them. And after 15 minutes of all that arguing to try and figure out what weapons they needed, they never even needed weapons. Like, they played everything well enough that it just never even came to that. And it was just a fun time. So, again, I'm still riding high on Starfinder. I love this game. So, what else we got for games? We got Gen Con coming up, which we put in our registration for events for that, and we got pretty much everything we wanted. We're going to be playing, actually, speaking of Starfinder, we're going to play in two different Starfinder games while we're there. A Pathfinder game, we're going to go see the Cards Against Humanity After Hours event, an escape room, so we're really looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun. Plus, you know, me and Dave are bringing God Ball, which... again, I ramble on about God Ball often enough, but we just finished up the rules so that we've got the rules and the cards. Everything is laid out in a finalized form so that now all we have to do is start printing things up and getting the sets ready and this kind of stuff. That temptation is always there. We've been to the finalized versions before, and it's always, oh, we do one playtest and suddenly, oh, it's time to rewrite everything. But this time we're going to be strong. This time, not changing anything until after Gen Con. We're going to get through all of our formal playtests and see how it goes. But anyway, we love our board game, so things are going well. All right, and Eli just bailed on us, so for reasons. And so therefore, I get to do whatever I want. So you know what I want to do?
Fingertips, fingertips, fingertips.
That's right, fingertips. Just stuff that I don't have a solid bit developed for yet. I've just jotted some stuff down. I'll read it off, maybe chit-chat, maybe not. We'll see. These are just things that I thought were interesting, so they're on my list. So here we go. First off, I was looking at a thing about naked mole rats, and this scientist has this colony of naked mole rats that, you know, it's all Tupperware containers and, you know, these big old tote things and plastic tubing going between one and the other, and there's all these mole rats in there, 300 naked mole rats in this colony, and they have implanted chips in all of them so they can track every movement every day and follow the patterns of where they move and how they huddle together and who they associate with and all of this stuff. And like, the video I'm watching, I can't even remember what channel it was or why I got to it, but the narrator asking, why would anyone want to track every movement of a colony of 300 naked mole rats? And my first thought was, what do you mean? What, why? Because it's awesome. I'm thinking, who wouldn't want to do that? That sounds amazing. I mean, I don't want to have to take care of 300 naked mole rats, but if I have the ability to look at that much data on just the patterns of their movement, I imagine. Ever since I was in junior high, I have had this vision as I watch the flow of students in the hallways. I always thought, God, what if we had a way of tracking every single person in this school? Because I went to several very large schools. And I thought, what if we could track everyone in these schools? And then you could look at the top-down map and just see the little dots to represent each person and watch how they flow and pass each other, and then, you know, everyone congregates into different rooms or into, and to me, that traffic flow of humanity is just a fascinating concept. And so here he is, this guy is doing it with naked mole rats. And there was a continuation video, which I wound up not having time to get to and don't remember what it was even. And so now it's kind of lost to me. I suppose I could go back through my YouTube history and see where the mole rat video was and then follow up, because like he was building up to something about how the calming effect of being in the presence of groups and I can't remember all the details, but it was really cool stuff. So anyway, to me, I just thought watching the naked mole rats and hearing this guy talk about what it's like to track all of them like that, it reminded me of my love of watching the flow of humanity. And I just, so, you know, I share. That's it. It's not a developed thing. I have no point to make. I'm just sharing. All right. My second thing under fingertips, though, American cheese. Now, you guys know I like cheese. I've tried all kinds of cheese now. All right. Every time I get a chance to try a new kind of cheese, I'm going to do it. And I have strong opinions about cheese in some cases. But when it comes to American cheese, American cheese, which is in general among cheese connoisseurs, reviled and kind of, you know, you turn your nose up at American cheese. I have decided, I used to think that Velveeta was my favorite cheese, but, you know, I was very young and uncultured then. American cheese, my absolute favorite cheese of all time. In most situations, I just love American cheese. And I was reminded of this when we were making omelets the other day, and I wound up making myself just a plain old American cheese omelet. Nothing else in it. No bacon, no ham, no nothing fancy, no veggies, nothing. It was just eggs and American cheese. And I remembered, oh God, yeah, that's how my mom used to make omelets when I was a kid. And there was such a rush of nostalgia. And I'm like, oh God, eggs and American cheese. This is the greatest thing in the world. I love it. So anyway, if anyone wants to disparage American cheese, I will fight you on this, because I love American cheese. I think it's great. I mean, I love lots of other cheeses, and I can appreciate the differences and the subtleties and this kind of thing. But man, American cheese is just a good cheese. Plus, you know, it's smooth and it melts so well, and it just, it's so easy to put into stuff. Mm. So anyway, that's that. Did you guys hear that they redefined the kilogram? It was a big old thing. That was, the kilogram was the thing they were really going on and on about. But ultimately, what they were really doing is redefining all of the metric or standard international units, and redefining all of them so that they no longer depend on any physical objects. Or is the kilogram, for the longest time, was defined as a weight equal to this kilogram mass that we have over here. I mean, that was it. We have a chunk of platinum that weighs 1 kilogram, and that's how we define a kilogram. And that chunk of platinum, you know, the weight of it, it has lost 50 micrograms over the years because, you know, it tarnishes. Things change, even platinum. And so it's not a constant. And so what they did was they redefined everything, the meter, the kilogram, a degree Celsius, amperage, all sorts of stuff is now defined in terms of universal constants. So based on the speed of light or the wavelengths of a cesium atom under specific conditions, or the, I mean, it's all stuff that is immutable. And it's really kind of cool. It's kind of cool that, I mean, you know, effectively, it means nothing to any of us in our day-to-day lives. And even for most scientists, it will mean almost nothing, because a kilogram still weighs a kilogram, at least to the precision level that we're going to get into. You know, so it doesn't really change much. You know, yeah, the common things around you still weigh as much as they always did. But the idea that it's now tied to some hard constant of the universe, I find that pretty cool. And, God, you know, all I have written here in my notes is that the SI units have been redefined. And I went through and I looked them all up, and for the life of me, I don't remember how they went about all of them, because it was, I mean, it starts off with the meter is defined as, you have to define a second first. Oh, a second is X number of vibrations of a cesium atom or whatever atom it is. But anyway, it's a specific isotope of this element and the wavelengths of it. And anyway, so they define how long a second is based on a number of wavelengths of this atom when it's vibrating. And then, based on the fact that we now have a second, we can now say the speed of light is how far light moves in this fraction of a second. All right, good. So now we've got time and we've got distance. Okay, great. Now we build up to weight, and then we build up to temperature. Anyway, it's fascinating. So I wish I had written down more, but you know what? I think if I had, I would just be really boring about it. So we're going to leave it at that one. I will say, though, as long as we're talking about this stuff, because it also got into measuring electrical charge and electrical units in general, and I discovered, helping my son Eli, who was just here earlier, helping him study for his physics test for the end of the year here, electricity in general makes me feel pretty dumb. I've got electricity is, there's the voltage and the amperage. And then when you multiply them together, you get the wattage, which is the total energy output. And for the life of me, they keep trying to do metaphors about, well, the size of the, it's like a flow of a volume of water, and the size of the pipe is your voltage, and then the amount of actual energy passing a point in a certain amount of time, that's your amperage. But when you multiply them together, I'm like, yeah, but it didn't quite make sense, because they both, the voltage and the amperage were dependent. Anyway, all I know is, for those of you who understand electricity, and you get it, and you think I'm just being weird here, it goes past me every time. It is this one area of physics, and I love physics. Oh man, I love physics. And this one area of physics, electricity, when we start putting things in parallel circuits or in series circuits, okay, I understand parallel and series. I understand a lot of these concepts around it. I can work with circuits. I can work with electricity. But then when you start getting down to the fundamentals of what electricity actually is and why these concepts are defined the way they are, for some reason, I can't grasp it. Slides right through my fingers every time. And so as I'm helping him study, like I'm reading off these metaphors from the book and we're covering the concepts from the study guide. And it's like, look, all I can tell you is just memorize it exactly like this. That's what I would do for the test because I can't normally I love studying science because I love coming up with metaphors and explanations and breaking things down into things that are easier to understand. I love doing that. And with electricity, I just can't do it. Man, it makes me feel dumb. So, I was going to say, I got one more chance because Noah's coming up, but Noah's like a science whiz. I'm not gonna put anything past him. He's not even going to need me to study for these things. Darn it. This may have been my last chance. Oh, well. You know what? Moving on. Okay. Here's a interesting thing that came up in a couple of different podcasts this week. You know the phrase, don't mess with Texas? Yeah, because, I'm from Texas, so I'm very familiar with the phrase, don't mess with Texas. And do you know where that came from? I had no idea until this week. So if you know, don't spoil it for the others. Let me do this. Don't mess with Texas was originally an anti-littering campaign slogan from the 80s. Don't mess with Texas was to stop people from littering in Texas, apparently. And now, 30-something years later, the original meaning of that is completely lost, and don't mess with Texas is just a catch-all slogan for we're tougher than you are. And Texans love that slogan. I mean, they really love that slogan. And yet, it started off as an advertising slogan, and nobody even remembers that anymore. But man, that thing stuck around. All right? So now you're going to see where this is going. Try not to guess too quickly. An apple a day keeps the doctor away? Right. Again, another advertising slogan invented by apple sellers because apples were mostly just used for making cider. I mean, apples were mostly just for alcohol production. And then Prohibition happened, and they said, you know what, maybe we could market them for eating. And so they marketed apples as a health food. And so thus the slogan, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. Nothing but an advertising slogan. Means nothing else. It's not like it came out of folk wisdom. It's not like it came out of any medical evidence. Not that you expected medical evidence 100 years ago. But it was just an advertising slogan. And yet people have internalized that. And we still say it today. I mean, weird, right? Okay. And here's the other one. The idea that breakfast is the most important meal of the day. I remember that being hammered into me when I was a kid, that breakfast is the most important meal of the day. That, you need to start your day with a good hearty breakfast to, get yourself some brain fuel going on so you're ready to tackle the things ahead. And it turns out breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Yet another advertising slogan invented by, I can't remember if it was the cereal manufacturers who just wanted to sell kids breakfast cereals, which are absolutely the worst way to start off your day. Just carb load with a ton of sugar. Oh, my God. Or if it was the bacon, the pork producers who were trying to sell bacon as part of a hearty breakfast. Because that's the other thing. Look, the whole bacon fad, this whole nonstop bacon fad we've had for the last 20, 30 years of bacon is this miracle food that, I mean, like bacon is the ultimate in taste, that, bacon goes on everything. You could put bacon with anything. That again, all, purely a marketing campaign, because fat was labeled as horrible for us. And so thus, before we got our Atkins diet and our keto diet and all this kind of stuff, people had decided that fat was the enemy. And so therefore, sales dropped off. Pork had to relabel itself as the other white meat to try and pretend it was healthy. And that left pork producers with a whole ton of pork bellies left over, which are mostly pure fat. And so how to sell all these pork bellies? Bacon, essentially. And that was, what if we made bacon hip and cool? And so they did. And here's the thing, we all fell for it. All right? And so when people try to claim that they're too smart for advertising, when they want to imagine that advertising doesn't affect them, doesn't affect their generation, oh yeah, yeah, our generation is too smart for this. Let me just tell you, you're not. This happens, has been happening for hundreds of years, and will continue to do so. As long as there is advertising, they will find a way to get to us, and they'll get under our skin, and they'll insinuate themselves into our thinking in ways that we didn't even realize was happening. All right? For example, the most recent one, man, if you have not watched Running from Cops is a podcast about the TV show Cops, and also to a lesser degree about the TV show Live PD. These are reality shows that show real life cops in action. They're just showing you a slice of life as it actually happens on the streets, supposedly. And in reality, these are as manipulated as any reality show behind the scenes. And they are propaganda in which the police departments involved have full veto power over what is and is not shown. And thus, the way it has shaped people's thinking about police work and about criminals for the last 30-something years that it's been on is just incredible. It's amazing. And again, you know, you think you're not affected? Yeah, of course you are. We all are. So anyway, I got a little off topic there, but again, it just kept coming up this week. And so therefore, here I am. All right, next one. I believe this was my son Jacob who came up with this. But we got done watching Endgame, and we were talking about Avengers Endgame, and we were just batting ideas back and forth. And what's the next steps? And where are we going to go from here? And if you haven't seen Endgame yet, A, shame on you, but B, again, skip ahead 2 minutes because I'm going to do some things that may be spoilery for you. But having given that warning, Jacob's idea for a TV show was there should be a new Marvel TV show called New Asgard. Like, literally take the city of New Asgard as it was shown in Endgame and just make a TV show about that. We've already got Valkyrie set up to be the new king of New Asgard, and she makes an awesome character, awesome leader. You've got the wacky alien characters from Ragnarok to be our comic relief. And then you've got Asgardians who are mostly just, you know, like humans, but, you know, improved. And then you can have a few of them that have special abilities. Like if you need a mystic with some kind of magical spell ability, you can work that in as an Asgardian. You can work in guys, characters who are, you know, stronger than average, faster than average, have certain powers, and they'll all be like minor superheroes, but nothing huge, all right? And then just do a TV show about them. How about that? And I thought, God, I would watch that. Because now, is New Asgard even in the comics? Because I don't know anything about it if it is. I don't know what happened in Ragnarok in the comics. I don't know where the Asgardians themselves ultimately wound up. But one of the things I'm looking forward to post Endgame here, especially with the connection that they've developed over several movies between Spider-Man and Tony Stark, for example, this is new. This is yes, Tony built the spider armor for Peter back in the comics, but it wasn't quite this father-son type relationship, this real mentor relationship like this. This is a new thing. They've gone in a new direction. And I'm just kind of excited about the idea of seeing things developed in the Marvel Universe, the cinematic universe for movies and TV that are just stuff that's just completely outside what the comics have ever done. Not just an adaptation or, oh, it's a different take on this storyline or that storyline. Although there's tons of great storylines out there. Wouldn't it be great to see them developing their own mythos that eventually they outgrow the comic origins because, you know, we've used up those stories, but the way we've adapted them has necessitated different takes on things. And it kind of moves us sort of beyond that into a very similar but different world. And I'm just super excited. I really loved Endgame and can't wait to see where they go from here. The next phase is just going to be thrilling. And yeah, technically, I know the next Spider-Man flick is actually considered the last of the last era of Marvel, and then the movie that comes past that will now be the opening of our new chapter. But I'm voting for Secret Wars. That's where I think we're going to go. We're going to go with Secret Wars, and this is just my guess, but I think we're going to have some kind of Secret Wars that mirrors Crisis on Infinite Earths from the DC universe. The idea that we're going to have multiple universes that all collide and merge with one another in a way, and thus when we're done with it, we'll suddenly get to have a couple of different Spider-Mans, so we can bring in Miles Morales into the MCU, and we'll also have the X-Men and the Fantastic Four pulled in from separate universes, and then they'll all be present, and it'll all kind of work the histories together and make a new shared universe so they can all be in the same MCU. That's my guess. But I don't know. I mean, look, they own all those properties now. I mean, Disney is the monster that rules us all, so they got to find a way to work them in, right? It'll get there. Okay. Next up. All right. So there was a group of scientists modeling the recent common ancestry of all living human beings. All right. And that's, in fact, the name of the article, Modeling the Recent Common Ancestry of All Living Humans. And it was an article by, let's see, Douglas, Rode, Olson, Chang. Okay. And the idea here is, if you go back far enough in history, for any species, but we're looking at humans right now, if you go back far enough, you will eventually find a place where you have a common ancestor to all living humans. This was all actually in a YouTube video about math. So it was actually talking about the math of finding common ancestors. But it linked me to this article. And so if you do the math on it, and this is the surprising part, the most recent common ancestor of all human beings would be a person who lived somewhere between 500 and 3,000 years ago. Now, 500 seems really recent to me to be the ancestor of all living humans. But it's possible. But, you know, probably it's someone from about 2,000 years ago. That's most likely. Maybe 1,500, something like that. But somewhere in that range, we're going to find a person from whom all living humans are descended in some way. Now, if you go back even further, you will eventually find the most recent universal ancestor generation. This one was just freaky. I'd never even heard this concept. And your universal ancestor generation means that generation of humans, everyone in that generation is either an ancestor of everyone alive today, or their line died out and they don't have any ancestors at all. So if you go back far enough, you eventually get a generation where basically everyone alive today is descended from every single person in that generation. How far back do you have to go for that one? 4,000 to 7,000 years. Again, you know, like the beginning of recorded history, approximately, that's a pretty cool coincidence. I mean, like 6,000 years ago, you know, with the biblical beginning of time, that would be the generation that would be a universal ancestor to all of us. Pretty cool. And so the quote from that article that I just thought was really cool, and this was what took me to this article, is the YouTube video quoted it. But the quote from the article is, "Our findings suggest a remarkable proposition. No matter the languages we speak or the color of our skin, we share ancestors who planted rice on the banks of the Yangtze. We all share ancestors who first domesticated horses on the steppes of the Ukraine, who hunted giant sloths in the forests of North and South America, and we all share ancestors who labored to build the Great Pyramid of Khufu." That's pretty profound. I just like that. So, let's see. I already did, you know what, am I going to review Endgame? Not really. I think Endgame was extremely well done. I loved Endgame. I thought the character development was amazing. As my friend Jeff Hawes says, you have how many main characters in this movie, and every one of them gets their moment. Everyone gets their moment to shine, where not only do they get to do something really cool, but it's meaningful and important to the plot. And that's like when you're talking 12 or 15 people that all have to have their moment. That's impressive as hell. The only downside I have to this movie, well, there's a couple of downsides. One, and this is where we get spoilery, but Captain Marvel, not well utilized in it. She's Superman, and the writers seem to have a lot of trouble dealing with Superman, so it's, oh, she's here to solve our problems when we need her to, and then, look, when we need other people to do stuff, she's just conveniently off-planet. Hey, there's lots of other people who need my help. Bye-bye. And it was really a little contrived, but that's minor because she's not an Avenger, and she wasn't really critical to the story. In regards to Captain Marvel, I hope this problem with Captain Marvel is not ongoing, because I really like Captain Marvel. I love her. And I want to see this character do well within the MCU, but they had that moment in the middle of, this is really spoilery, they have this moment in the middle of the final battle where they've got the gauntlet, and someone says, they give it to Captain Marvel, and they say, how is she going to get it across the battlefield? And so then they have this intentional girl power moment where they go, well, she has help. And then you see every single female hero on the battlefield all happens to wind up in that exact spot at that exact moment so they can pose for a poster to show their girl power, which, again, I love the female heroes, and I love the strength of them. I love the character of them. But, man, that was a contrived moment, and it was really lame. I mean, it really took me out of the movie for that moment to go. And second of all, what do you mean, how is she going to get it across the battlefield? Captain Marvel doesn't need your help. She's going to get it across by plowing through everybody and everything, which is exactly what she did. She didn't need help. It's ridiculous. But then the other part is the very, very end. And, this is super spoilery. Honestly, just skip ahead. If you have not seen the movie, give me a couple minutes. I'm sorry I'm going to do this to you. But at the very end, really, all of their time travel, if you've seen it, I don't care what you think about the time travel. For me, up until that last moment of the movie with Captain America, up until the last moment, all the time travel worked for me. All of it was justified. They explained within the story why they had limited uses of time travel, why this wasn't a cure-all to everything going on. They solved how you deal with the alternate timelines or potential time conflicts and time loops. All of that was addressed, and I felt adequately. And you know me, I love a time travel movie. Man, I love a time travel movie. And this I thought handled it super well. All right. So then at the very end, Captain Marvel goes back to fix all of the timelines that they broke. Awesome. That's great. And now the only way you can get from an alternate timeline to ours is using the Pym particles, so you have to come through the portal. We established that if you want to get back from that time, you're in an alternate timeline now, you have to come through the portal. And yet, at the end, he doesn't come through the portal. He just shows up on the banks as if he has lived through time to age up to this moment, which he can't do because he didn't come through the portal. He was in an alternate timeline. The minute he went back in time, he was no longer in our time. And the solution to it was to have the exact same end scene and just have him walk through the damn portal. How tough was that? Like if you want that dramatic tension of making it delay for a few seconds and go, well, he should be here by now. What happened? And then all of a sudden he's there. Okay, great. Have your dramatic tension, but the man had to come through the portal. I can't stress that enough. I guess that I'm sounding really worked up about this, but damn it, man, come on. All right. But other than that, I mean, like I say, there's little quibbles here and there, but ultimately, man, it was a great movie. It's a lot of fun. You know what? That is it. I am going to turn it over to R2-D2 and the Pod-O-Matic. Oh, he's not on. God, that's our triumphant return after a month, huh? Yeah. Hot dog, this is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. Where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? Then you send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums, and I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. How exciting is that, right? And our first number is a 28. And 28 comes from, hey, it comes from my friend Charlotte. And Charlotte says, restaurants sometimes close, taking with them dishes that broken-hearted patrons will never eat again. There should be a name for these culinary deaths. Ooh. You are charged with creating one. Please limit yourself to two words, bonus points for rhyming. Oh man, I should have seen this question before it ever went in the list and had a pre-prepared answer so I could just stun you with my wit right off the tip of my tongue. But I did not do that, so you're going to have to watch me struggle. And I can't get the bonus points for the rhyming, but I'm pretty sure we can get some alliteration going here, because alliteration is what I can do. And Noah was over there shouting the word culinary, so I'm going to go with culinary casualties. Or you could go with culinary corpses. Corpses is really gross, though, for food. But, something like that. Deceased dishes is just too expected. Man, there's got to be something more creative. All right. It is up to you guys to come up with better terms than what I've got. Culinary casualties is the best I can get right now. But I trust you guys to come up with a better suggestion than that. All right. 81, which is 3 to the 4th power, obviously. Let's see. 81. Oh, I'm almost there. Really? There it is. It's from Kyle. And my brother Kyle says, if computers become advanced enough to start making policy decisions, should we let them? Mm. Well, okay. If they're advanced enough to make policy decisions, then, I mean, that condition implies that we think they are qualified to do it. Should we let them? Man, in some cases, it depends on what the policies are about. Really, but you're... question is way longer than this. So computers are better at math, so we trust them to do our math. They're also better at solving lots of problems, emergency planning scenarios, disease management and treatment, traffic routing and engineering. So what if they get better at policy decisions? Well, again, it depends on what conditions we're putting in. I mean, if you're talking about, yeah, specifically policies on how to, on processes, policies about, but I mean, you're talking about making decisions on moral issues? I don't know. I mean, honestly, this is how we got paranoia, really. So it is scary, and the nightmare scenarios of this have been written about endlessly in science fiction. I don't know. I would have to see the computer and try to understand its capabilities. And how it makes its decisions and who is responsible for it and what fail-safes there are. God, there's so much that goes with it. So I'm going to just give a blanket no, not for now, but I could change my mind. I don't know enough. 03. And 03 is an entry from Walrus. Oh, darn it, no, I just realized I'm already recording on Monday night. I'm not going to have enough time to go out and find that sound clip, because I had some troubles with it before getting it to transfer correctly. So I don't yet have the sound clip from Futurama, so that every time I say Walrus's name, I then get to hear, once they go Walrus. Nobody ever goes Walrus. I just can't do it. So, but next time, I will work on that, because that's important to me. Walrus says, if you haven't had any Walrus comment one any walrus comment ones come up yet. This will look goofy, but I'm betting you have, or will, try to excuse claiming that walruses can play chess by not taking me seriously as a walrus. My tank has a big rubberized keyboard layout laid out letter by letter so I can flap around on the keys one by one. Why don't you take me seriously? Look, look, walrus. Walrus.
Nobody ever knows walrus.
I grant you that you are a walrus. And I grant you that you are emailing me from a waterproof computer in your tank. I am fine with all of that. That is great. But, you know, I don't take you seriously because you are a walrus. I mean, is that racist? I mean, I can't. It's really, I mean, now, you know what? I was going to say something disparaging about Canadians, but it would have been just a joke and unfair and not something I believe in. So I'm not going to do that. I'll just stick to dirty, dirty walrus. All right, 77. And 77 comes from, oh, there it is, comes from Ronster. And my friend Ron says, will we ever be able to live without computers? Oh, yeah, easily. Of course we can. If such a day were to come that we did not have computers available to us anymore, it would be painful for many, but we would get by and we'd be just fine. You know, there's lots of growing pains, but it's not like the knowledge to exist without computers isn't there. It's just, oh, so painful to transition to. I just, yeah, boy, do you remember the days when breaking down by the side of the road involved, I don't know, flagging down a passing motorist or hoofing it to a nearby farmhouse to try and find a phone so you could call for help? Do you remember those days? Oh, man. I mean, it's terrifying and horrible, but, you know, we did it before. We could do it again. Yeah, not a big deal. All right. But that is where I'm going to cut this off. Because even though I've been away forever, boy, things are finally winding down. And I apologize for that absence. I really do. It just, week after week after week, it just seemed like things just never worked out. And I've just been so tired. But feeling better. This is the end of it. My wife and kids are off of school for the summer. Man, I got, like I say, we got a lot of the God ball pressure is, well, it's now different God ball pressure. But, you know, this game development stuff is fun, but stressful. So, but anyway, I think things are going to be better for the summer. Yeah, fingers crossed, right? Let's turn it over to GLaDOS and let her give us a recap of this week's episode so far.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2019 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disc by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week is Weezer's In the Garage and Fingertips by They Might Be Giants. All the songs I use are available on iTunes. You check them out, you buy them, I enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. I always say iTunes, but, you know, I don't even use iTunes anymore. Look, you can get them on Spotify. You can get them on Google Play Music. You can get them, yeah, you can get wherever you get songs. They're all there. All right. If you want to help out Nerd Pride, subscribe to this podcast in whatever podcatcher you use and write me a nice review or a crappy review as long as you give it 5 stars because that's what makes the difference. But if you want to do something super nice for this podcast, recommend it to your friends because you're enjoying it, and I know you are. So spread the word. Let other people enjoy it as well. You shouldn't be alone in this. Word of mouth is my bread and butter, people. Remember, I am always looking for you listeners to do my work for me. Don't forget to send me questions and topics for the Podomatic. Watch out every week on the forums and on Facebook for listener betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, send it to me and save me all of that grueling research. My contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on some social media. But to be completely honest, seriously, you want to come talk to me? Best way to do it is sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. You sign up there, you send me a message. We will start hanging out together, we'll do stuff, play games. We will become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. now it's time for listener betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, I go out to the internets and I start and I post up that I'm recording and hey, does anyone want to talk to me? Then whatever the people post up while I'm recording, I read off at the end of the cast. And that's what I'm doing right now. I did not go to my forums or Facebook this time. I only went to the Gallium Club members for Nerd Pride Radio. And let's see. Oh, hey, I got a few. So, Kyle says, yo, what's more important than pi, numerically speaking? Numerically speaking, more important than pi? I always think zero. Zero to me is just the greatest numerical discovery. The idea that we had counting numbers for how long? And finally someone said, you know what we need? We need a number for nothing. Yeah, that's right. Nothing. Zero. Zero is way more important than pi for all sorts of reasons. So I love zero. Let's see. What else we got? Let's see. From Jacob. Jacob says, how many elephants can you fit in a room before they fall through the floor? Well, the answer, my friends, is blowing in the wind. It's 1, 2, 3, 4. Loud crashing noise behind me. Oh, 4. I think that was from Sesame Street, I think. I always loved that one. God, I loved that one. Let's see. Oh, hey, from my wife, Lisa says, are we going to the Potter Fair on Sunday? Boy, I hope so. You know what? I really need to
hope so.
Yeah, I know you hope so. We got to see if we can get tickets for that, which I'm sure we can. I just need to order them. I'll do that as soon as we're done recording here. What a great idea. Let's see. After that, I have one from... Oh, not there. Let's see. Oh, one from Dave. Dave says, oh gosh, you've probably already talked about it, but how does it feel to be at this stage of a long and challenging project? I'm specifically referring to Godball, but any long and challenging project will do. Look, I have talked a little bit about Godball already because it's nonstop on my mind. But here's the thing. We've been working on Godball for over 2 years. I have never put in this level of sustained effort for any artistic project ever. I mean, I've done, you know, I've written games before, role-playing games, and they have had an awful lot of work put into them, but nothing on the level of this one. This is just qualitatively different. It being a board game and requiring, you know, the actual physical pieces and all this constant playtesting. See, the games I've written in the past, never bothered to playtest so much. I mean, we did some, especially with Instant Game, but it's just different. And so it feels really good right now because, again, we're at a spot where we've got our rules written. We've got them written and we're setting them in stone, or at least amber, something. And we're going to keep from doing anything too drastic with it until the playtest. So now, I mean, the challenges now are just, look, I gotta redesign a couple of tokens. You know, it's a little artwork stuff just to make sure everything looks right. And then, you know, it's printing them up and putting stickers on little wood chips and stuff like this. But it's all just arts and crafts now. It's not this dynamic of the rules and making sure everything's compatible with everything else. Now it's just making pieces, which is way different. It'll be its own set of challenges because there's some stuff I want to try out that is very weird. But it feels really good. I am really, really proud of what we've done. I think we have a great game here. I think we have something really, really awesome. But, you know, it's our very first game, and so there's always that insecurity that makes me worry that what if it's not really as good as we think it is? What if we get to playtesting and everybody hates it? What if all this love we've felt for it so far is just because it's, you know, friends and family and people we know fairly well but can't let that happen. No, the plan is we go to Gen Con. During our playtests, we are discovered, like starlets in Hollywood. We are discovered by some big game company that's willing to put a lot of money behind it. And then they take it out of our hands, and they sell 2 million copies, and we just get rich. Our work now is done. All we have to do is wait for the money to roll in. I am pretty sure that's how it's going to work. So, it's nerve-wracking, exciting, a lot of fun. Ultimately, when this whole process is finished, we are going to have a finished game in our hands. And that is going to be amazing. That's what I'm looking forward to. The idea that lots of people might see it and that we might make some money off of it, or at least not lose money, that's also a really exciting prospect. But for now, just to see that we make a game and that it's actually real and that people play it and enjoy it, that's pretty exciting. I like it a lot. Okay, next up, that was Dave. So next up is, oh, this is my last one. This is from my son Noah. And it says, what is your greatest petty fear? Well, I don't, what do you mean by petty?
Just like something small for no reason. Also, I just sent you the other question because I just thought of it.
Let's see. My greatest petty fear. Look, I don't know that my fears are ever petty, but my greatest fear is just heights. And more specifically, my children around heights. My children potentially in dangerous situations, or any child for that matter, but mine in particular. Very, very scary. It just sets me completely on edge as I start imagining scenarios in which people fall to their deaths and horrible things happen, and you just topple over a railing so easily. Oh my God, get away from there! That kind of thing. That's my biggest fear. And again, I don't know that that's a petty fear, because that's like a perfectly reasonable fear in my mind. That is a, just be careful. Why? You can't, oh God. All right. Look, it's starting to get me worked up just thinking about it. I gotta stop doing that. Let's see. And then he just sent me another question as long as I was talking to you. And also, what is a habit that you have for seemingly no reason? Look, bad habits I have, picking at my nails, sometimes biting my nails, but mostly it's just picking at them. I use one fingernail to peel up the corner of another fingernail and peel them off. Or sometimes my toenails if I'm, like sitting in bed watching TV or something like that. And so I've got my bare feet there. It drives Lisa crazy, because that when you're picking at something like that, a lot of times it's not even to peel it off of there. It's just picking at the corner of it. Just click, 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 click. Noise drives her nuts.
But that's, I hate it when I do that, because I have a finger that whenever you touch the sides of it, that after I do that, it just feels like I'm getting cut.
Yeah, yeah. See, because that's like it feels like you're getting
thumb, and then you
right.
Press on the side of
it
that
feels
thumb,
like it's cut because you peeled it down too short. That's, yeah, it's bad.
Ugh, that sucks when it's always,
yeah.
Like, you have
I've always been bad about my nails. I have, through my life, I will occasionally have periods where I don't pick at my nails, and they'll look really nice for, well, or nice relative to me, for, 6 months or a couple of years I did once. And then eventually something will happen and one of my nails will get shredded. I'll go through a period of stress, and it's like once one of them's gone, it's like then you just start picking at all of them. It's really, it's a terrible habit, but I do it. So anyway, that is the end of this podcast. I appreciate you guys coming around. Thank you so much for being patient with me and joining me on this. I love you guys. You're all awesome, and I cannot wait to talk to you next week. Good night.